thing that I've been looking for. Been running around for so long. Now I got you, I won't let you go. You got that thing that I've been looking for. And you got a heart full of gold. And that's really turning me on. You are, you are, you are, you are, you are everything that I dreamed of. Now I can paint a picture. You are, you are, you are, you are, you are making my life much greener.
Hello, Pacifica Radio Network. You're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil, headquartered at KPFK Safe Harbor. Cynthia's Midnight Oil, raw, uncut, community power for your eardrums. Cynthia's Midnight Oil is where I can tell you the truth like this. I want you to consider this show as your liberated zone, where the shackles on your mind are the first to go. You might get shocked, maybe even outraged, but my hope is that you will not think about things in the same way. That what you thought was conventional wisdom, you will soon come to realize might be conventional and also is not wisdom. Or phrased another way, that your thinking will become less conventional and more wise. The great South African anti-apartheid leader Steve Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. So we should be sexual. So I am without my equipment, but I didn't want to let this moment go by for Midnight Oil. And so we're going to do a kind of different kind of show tonight. And I'm thankful to my great friend, Don DeBar, who's helping me out in making this possible.
So we have a lot to talk about, and it's on the anniversary or the celebration of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. So let's just jump in. You wanted to talk about a number of things, starting with the assassination of Dr. King.
Well, I think it's always important to remember that Dr. King was murdered, and he was murdered because of his beliefs and his principles and the impact that he could have on a community, on society. And it is that impact, probably more important than the social impact, is the policy impact. And so the MLK assassination, we can't revisit it too many times. It's a lesson for us to learn about organizing, about policy implementation. There's so much that we can learn by studying the life and the times of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
You know, one of the things that I see as one of the present day ironies, for example, is the fact that the main charge that people like J. Edgar Hoover and others had against King was the fact that they considered him a Russian dupe and the civil rights movement as a Russian conspiracy, which are, these are common terms that we're hearing just today. what do you think about that? And I guess what we could do is start talking about the broad range of assassinations that took place in the 60s of people that were essentially trying to organize workers across, you know, racial lines, all the divides, really. Malcolm X came to that point shortly before he was killed. Dr. King started with the Poor People's Campaign shortly before he was killed. And, of course, the potential that Kennedy had, RFK had. And JFK.
That's right. Well, JFK, MLK, and RFK. And, in fact, I guess you could say this three-part story that's written in the blood of America's heroes is something that's important for us to always remember. And the links between the MLK, RFK, JFK assassinations is live because some of these individuals are still living today. And that's the scary part, that if you think about the policy implications of these murders, JFK was putting the United States on a particular track, a track that it had not experienced before. It could possibly have been the kind of policy track that people like you and me just dream of, that right. The United States is a force for good in the world, that the United States is actually an anti-war entity. Can you imagine
right.
what the United States could become if we weren't saddled with the obstructions of CIA and all of the other intelligence services? They're not really services, because they do a disservice, the intelligence disservice that's done to the country and to the people.
Yeah, I mean, JFK first committed original sin, I guess, by refusing to send air cover to cover the Bay of Pigs and to invade Cuba, then the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and then the apparent intent to withdraw from Vietnam. And those were the things that and the embracing of civil rights that he essentially announced were the sins that cost him his life in the eyes, and wanting to shut down the CIA. That was also in the mix, for sure.
That's right. Scattering the CIA to the four winds.
That's right.
And you're absolutely right that there's quite a few parallels between the rhetoric of that particular time and what's happening today, the rhetoric of today. I hadn't thought about it before, but I think it's definitely something that is worth thinking about.
So let's talk some about these assassinations and some of the players.
Well, of course, you've got the Dulles brothers, who set the United States on a particularly nasty track. And that's not to say that, you know, it's sort of like, you know, make America great again. Okay, well, tell me again when it was that America
and how
was
it was
great.
Yeah, exactly what was great about it.
Right. Right. But these policies of assassination and dirty tricks, and it seems that the United States government came of its own during this time and doing these kinds of things, so that the United States became known as Murder Incorporated. And that was really serious, whether it was using bacteria and to destroy livestock, or I mean, you know, you name it. And this Murder Incorporated crew, they've done it, and it's all been done in our names. And this is where I have a problem with, particularly now that we have so much access to information, that the American people can say, well, I didn't know my government was doing that, and so therefore, I'm not complicit. Well, at what point do people not become complicit in the crimes that they pay for?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm looking at people getting ready to go into the streets to try to stop, many of them say, the inauguration on Friday of Trump. And at the heart of it, even from Democrats and people that consider themselves on the left, is Trump's willingness to try to find some kind of detente with Russia, which is evidence to these folks that they claim both of his being a puppet of Moscow and particularly of President Vladimir Putin, and therefore rendering his presidency illegitimate. And I saw an interesting little back and forth on CNN this morning with Gerald Nadler from New York, a Democratic Congress member, and the host on CNN. Nadler said he was an illegitimate president, but That did not mean he was illegal, that his election and his installation as president is entirely legal. And the host on CNN said, aren't we talking about semantics? In other words, even people that are reporting the news are unclear on whether legitimacy means that he's not legally the president, and therefore anything that follows, like installing Paul Ryan as president, is legitimate.
Well, I saw something in my perusals that, well, they're talking about the legitimacy of the Trump presidency, but what's the legitimacy of the what I saw reported today was some people are questioning the legitimacy of even the Clinton candidacy in the way in which she became the Democratic nominee.
Right.
That if you want to start questioning legitimate, you know,
right.
Political actors, you know, how far back do you want to go? Because you can go a long way back.
Maybe November 22nd, 1963, perhaps.
Exactly. You want to go there? Then yeah, let's go there. And then you've got the rise, I think, of these really heroic individuals who I called the name John Judge, and you know. It's an individual I look up to so much, who was affected personally by the doings of the government of this Murder Incorporated, and then took it upon himself to try and change his level of complicity in that. And then you've got Dr. Peter Dale Scott, who served on my dissertation committee, and he's one of those great unsung independent researchers as well, came up with the theory of the actors inside the deep state and deep politics, deep state.
Everybody's deep using events. That. He invented that term more or less, and everybody's using it now. And no one mentions his name,
yes.
Of course.
Yes, it's Dr. Peter Dale Scott. And then, of course, you have Cyril Recht, who represents the kind of professional person who, well, you know, risks everything by telling the truth. And so all of these people, from John Judge as a citizen researcher to Dr. Peter Dale Scott as a deep thinker, political intellectual, and then you have Cyril Wecht, who was asked by the American Medical Association to investigate these rumors about JFK's brain. So then he was asked to review the autopsy report. And instead of covering up, as the Warren Commission did, Cyril Wecht told the truth and said, no, the wounds do not comport with the narrative that is being advanced. Mm. And then Cyril Wecht has seen, you know, then of course he was invited to go in on RFK and investigate RFK. And it's Cyril Wecht's testimony that leads us to the firm knowledge that there's no way Sirhan Sirhan could have killed RFK because he never got close enough. Mm. And the organization that was set up by John Judge, Peter Dale Scott, and Cyril Wecht is this Committee on Political Assassinations. And these citizen researchers then devoted probably tens of thousands of research hours into scouring these records, the official records, to to discern anything that they could about what the true scenario might have been on JFK and RFK. And then after I got elected to Congress, that group of researchers through John Judge reached out to me and said, look, take a look at this on MLK. And then when they showed me the information on, like, for example, Operation Lantern Spike, which was the military intelligence tracking of Dr. King for the last few hours of his life. And you get the same names, the same players, the same methodology once again uncovered through the work of these individuals. So, and then the latest one is Judith Berry Baker, who dated Lee Harvey Oswald. And whoa. I think the record now is abundantly clear that Lee Harvey Oswald was set up to spy on, he was set up by one, the CIA, to actually be the patsy. But Lee Harvey Oswald had some relationship with FBI as well. We're talking about J. Edgar Hoover. And so then J. Edgar Hoover fingers the CIA guy. It's just like all of this intrigue inside the government, FBI spying on CIA, FBI has to let the CIA know, yeah, we know who what you're doing, and we got it all pegged, right? And then, so this is how Lee Harvey Oswald becomes the patsy. Judith Berry Baker in her book tells all of this and in her lectures as well. But the point is that because of government lies and media complicity, not necessarily in the lies, but in the omissions, then you had the rise of these citizen researchers. Today is a similar situation where the citizens have to take it upon themselves to be able to discern the truth, because there's no way we can get to the truth through the fog of the complicit media, which is even worse today than it was back then.
You know, the complicity of the media, for example, at that time, say in November of 1963, left them not reporting the fact that Kennedy had, reminding people that Kennedy had prevailed upon Dulles, the CIA director, to resign on November 29th, 1961. 2 years to the day later, LBJ appointed Dulles as one of the seven members on the Warren Commission. And that alone should have raised some eyebrows that, hey, you know what? They're bringing this guy back in who was the head of the CIA from its beginning, more or less, first civilian head of the CIA, and the deputy from the beginning. The assassination has all these questions that are going to be investigated, and one of the people is a guy with motive.
Right. And here's the thing.
and opportunity.
As we're just exploring this, LBJ should have been in prison because he was corrupt as all get out, and at the time was being investigated for corruption. Now, this is strikingly similar to the Clintons with
right.
Hillary.
Yeah, it looks.
And so what
familiar.
Happens with LBJ is he becomes the president. Mm-hmm. Crooked LBJ becomes the president.
Yeah.
The exact same replay, because what I'm sort of sensing is that it's like a football coaches playbook. You got the way you do the draw play, the screen pass, the Hail Mary. I mean, you got certain plays that are a template for no matter what the player is.
Yeah.
And so we've got some templates that if we just study this and look at it, we can understand that the players may change, but we understand the move.
You know,
and Hillary could have been just another LBJ, but it didn't work out this time because of the interruption of this scheme. And no, I don't even realize, I didn't realize at the time that I said it, how criminal the syndicate is that has now gained control of the U.S. government. But it is, the U.S. government is being managed by a criminal syndicate. The question that I have for the likes of John Lewis and Barbara Lee, I was so disappointed in Barbara Lee when she invoked this Russian meme that had been handed to us by the powers that be, that hopefully will be prosecuted by Attorney General Sessions. And John Lewis, what is it they want? They want Hillary Clinton to be the president? Is that what you talk about restoring legitimacy? Is that what the legitimate, you want the restoration of the illegitimate, immoral, crooked government that has been evidenced by not the rhetoric of Hillary Clinton, but the actions from Haiti to Libya to Syria? And there's one citizen researcher that I think becomes really, really important because he's taken the time to go through the WikiLeaks emails. Well, it's actually several sets of emails. We have the Judicial Watch emails that were forced to be made public by a lawsuit from Judicial Watch. So we have those emails of Secretary of State Clinton's time. Then we have the WikiLeaks Democratic Party emails, and we have the WikiLeaks John Podesta emails, and we have the WikiLeaks Clinton Foundation emails. So we have several sets of emails that are out there from FOIA requests. There's one young journalist whose name I can't remember now. He's a citizen journalist as well. And he just specializes in FOIA requests. That's what he churns out. And so we've got his emails. We've got the emails that are produced by Judicial Watch. And then we've got the WikiLeaks emails, which were not hacks, but were leaks. And so this information is out there now. And this one particular researcher by the name of, I think his name is Gary Webb. Can't be Gary Webb. What is his name? Oh, his name is George Webb. This researcher has taken the information from all of these vast email disclosures and has put them together to tell the story. And the series that he's produced is called Where is Eric Braverman? That is important because Eric Braverman was the person, the accountant, that was brought in to the Clinton Foundation by Chelsea Clinton. He was Chelsea's friend. And what he wanted to do was to make the books transparent at the Clinton Foundation. That was a swamp in there too. And he was just trying to get all the muck and mire out of the swamp and get it so that it could reliably be said to be in compliance with regular accounting standards.
You know, that's some interesting context for something, because it's reported in the news today that the Clinton Global Initiative has given a termination notice that it's required to do under, I think, federal law or New York State law, that they're going to be discharging their employees. They're shutting down shop, in other words.
Well, they need to shut down shop before Attorney General Sessions gets started. And, you know, the people who heard Donald Trump in the debate, I think it was the last debate, maybe it was the second debate, when he said, yeah, because you'd be in prison. And then he made a commitment to investigate the Clintons. I think that was a commitment. Now, I know Henry Kissinger said, don't expect him to keep his commitments. Don't expect him to keep all of his commitments. Well, we definitely want some transparency out of what our former president was doing in our name and with public dollars, by the way, and what our former Secretary of State were doing with public dollars in the name of the people of the United States of America. And what George Webb has uncovered is seemly and it's ugly. It's not just seemly. That's so nice and tidy a word for it.
You know, you're talking about the complicity of the media, and you're talking about the playbook, you know, being replayed. I think one of the reasons, one of the biggest sins that they're laying at the feet of Russia right now, as they basically as they mobilize for war on its borders, by the way, is the fact that yes. Russian media was able to break the narrative with some facts, and they claim that that influenced the election, and perhaps it did, perhaps it didn't, but no one is disputing that they were facts. It was just that they were brought to the narrative by, you know, an outside player, by a foreign power, quote unquote, and that's something that didn't exist back in 1963 or 1968.
Well, I'm absolutely waiting for, you know, I watched with rapt attention the press conference that was held by the Russian military when it first advanced the evidence about Turkish complicity in the destruction of Syria, the theft of Syria's oil, and the overall Turkish support for ISIS in Syria, quote unquote ISIS. We know from Wesley Clark that ISIS is a geostrategic tool used to advance the policy interests of the United States. Let us not lose sight of that. Let us not forget that. So, The Russian military had a press conference where they laid everything out. And now, of course, because of the the media in the U.S. are so unreliable now. That used to be the global media, but no longer can retain that title. They, you know, if you look at which is what is contained in this report, this so-called report about the Russian influence on the U.S. election. What they talk about is Twitter hits and Facebook likes and that sort of thing for Russia Today and radio and Sputnik. But the people who care about U.S. policy have found so utterly unreliable are Fox, CNN, BBC, all the rest of them, that they have been forced to go where they can get some objective reporting.
Right.
And that has been Press TV, Russia Today, Sputnik. That's where the objective reporting is. Mm-hmm. And so it's evidence-based reporting. So now you're absolutely right that there's an alternative media out there. And in fact, I embrace Trump's idea of saying, okay, we're going to let bloggers come in. We're going to just open this thing up. And I embrace Trump's Twitter activity as well, because he reaches with every tweet. He reaches, I think his number is now 12 million. It could be more.
Yeah, lots.
He reaches 12 million people with one tweet.
Right.
And he has reduced CNN and Fox and all the rest of them to just interpreting his tweets.
Right.
But I don't need them to interpret his tweets, because I have a brain. I can do my research. I can find out when he's right, when he's wrong, when he's on the right track, and I can do my own research. And so therefore, I don't need CNN, Wolf Blitzer, who is a special interest. I don't need any of them to interpret what I can interpret for myself. So I think that an entirely new landscape has been created, which is absolutely fabulous, again, for people like me and these citizen researchers who now will grab hold of the evidence to tell the rest of the story. The rest of the story is what we're interested in, not medialized disinformation, fake news, propaganda, the Grand Wurlitzer, as the CIA called
right.
Operation Mockingbird and all of them. So now we can begin to silence the Grand Wurlitzer. What I'm waiting for is one of those press conferences about, well, let's share what really happened. What were the satellite feeds telling you on September 11th? What information do you have? Because the Russians were one of those countries that gave a warning. We now know that the Egyptians, there were lots of countries that gave warnings. So that there's a lot of information about September 11th yet to be uncovered, yet to be known by the public. Most importantly, the U.S. public that has been completely duped since September 11th.
You know, one of the interesting byproducts of the internet, and one of the foils to the attempt to use the playbook, using the mainstream media in, you know, unprecedented unison, by the way, in terms of concentration of ownership and consistency of narrative from, you know, across the spectrum, is the fact that things, even like the reports issued by the CIA and this report that talks about Trump and prostitutes and all of that, people get to look at the entire document. And as you pour through it, citizen journalists, just citizens, people looking at these things can see for themselves, well, there's no evidence. You don't have exhibits A, B, C, and D that here's a photograph of Trump with prostitutes going into the room. Here's a photograph of Obama 2 months earlier using that room, whatever. All of the things that are supposed to be the factual basis of the narrative are missing. People see that. A lot of people notice it. And the media polls in single digits in terms of favorable ratings already, so people don't believe them.
I think as we conclude and then begin to get ready to hear George Webb, citizen researcher who has put all of these treasure troves of emails that have real content, because now these emails haven't been doctored, and that's the content that they don't want anybody to pay attention to, and right. Which is the reason they come up with this idea of fake news. But the real news is inside those emails. I just think it's important for us to remember that either this ship of state is going to belong to us, or we're going to hand it over completely to this criminal cabal. And that requires the engagement of all of us in actually sitting down and reading the emails. Let's just do that, because the information is there, and I think you will be shocked. You, the listening audience, will be shocked and appalled at what Clinton and Sidney Blumenthal and Cheryl Mills and Huma back and forth with all of their other underlings discussing the fate of countries and the profit that they could get from it. It's just absolutely amazing. It's outrageous. It's illegal. And so far, no one has paid the way the hungry veteran sleeping on the street, locked up and harassed by police officers in jail, out of jail, back in jail, out of jail for panhandling and asking for money. Those people are harassed and not allowed to even live a decent life. And we've got these high crimes and misdemeanors that have been committed in my name, your name, with our tax dollars. I'm still waiting for justice. I am not going to stop until we get some justice. So, Don, thanks so very much for engaging me and making this episode of Midnight Oil possible. And so then what I'd like to do is just introduce quite briefly the two episodes that you will hear are from citizen researcher George Webb, who has read all of these related emails and has put together the trail of policies and behaviors and actions of certain players. Those players include Hillary, Sidney Blumenthal, James Comey himself over the years, General Petraeus. These are not names that are unfamiliar to you, and actually not even actions that are unfamiliar, but telling the whole story as a narrative makes it look extremely ugly, and justice must be demanded. So now we'll hear Where is Eric Braverman by George Webb, Day 61, two installments.
Okay, this is Day 61. No signs of Eric Braverman, Neil Brown, or Mark Turi. Interesting, though, somebody did send an email to Braverman's email address at Yale, and they got what's known as a read receipt, which meant somebody read it, either Braverman or somebody answering Braverman's email. Interesting, the plot thickens. So many things happening in one day. I think this will be just the first edition, an early edition, and I'll do a later edition today. You're going to see these four steps of taking Libya and Syria as not just two or four steps. It's actually just one big operation now that I've done a lot more research. And the other thing is I can no longer ignore the research of the folks that are doing the sex trafficking investigations, the Pizzagate thing. I have to bring that in because there's just so much overwhelming evidence in Libya and especially Syria of sex trafficking. It's almost the first thing. It's almost the first rat line that's being built even before the oil rat lines are being built. So I have to bring that in. And I'm going to go to Haiti first today and just talk about how Haiti's really a template for this. Haiti happens first, and then Libya, and then Syria. So Haiti really becomes a template for all this. And the Braverman is sent to Haiti, and he sets up this IHRC, which is, you know, funny that it's the last three initials are Hillary's, when he's at McKinsey. And this is basically a way of getting World Bank loans. You send in a group like McKinsey to make sure that, you know, everything's, you know, on the up and up, and then you basically lay in the loans for infrastructure, roads and, you know, ship ports and rail lines and so forth. And you're going to do that near the oil area. So this is a good team here between him and Neil Brown. Interestingly enough, when this first two steps of toppling Gaddafi come in and this money starts coming in, Laura Graham is the person at the Clinton Foundation at the time, and she's going to also be on this HRC. And this is where, at the end of the year, December 2011, this is where she's at the pier in Staten Island about ready to drive off. She's got drive into the water and commit suicide. Because there's so much infighting over this money, as this Haiti money and this Libya money starts coming back into the Clinton Foundation. And just interesting, Braverman just kind of, when he gets brought in, he kind of replaces Laura Graham. And this is really turning into a Hamlet where he's just trapped inside this evil castle, and everywhere he turns is another thing that he, you know, reprehensible thing. Haiti is looking like Libya and Syria now. The earthquake or whatever caused it is just the invasion piece. And the second piece of establishing these rat lines is what happens. And then third, you know, selling off the assets, oil assets, and doing a development. So if you haven't seen the previous ones, previous shows, but Hillary commissions Blumenthal to hire Muslim Brotherhood to get the Stingers to take Libya and Syria. Today we're going to add Haiti. So here's the Haitian puzzle. Two more characters that I'm going to introduce here. One is Jeff Skoll, who founded eBay and then kind of went, after he made his billions there, then kind of went to Hollywood. This is Frank Giusto that you've met from earlier episodes. He makes his money with the Uranium One deal with Hillary and other deals with Bill Clinton in Asia. And he also goes to Hollywood. And then there's a third guy here in Haiti. That's Carlos Slim, that made all the money with the cell phones in Mexico. He's probably richer now than Bill Gates. So Jeff Skoll here is connected with Eric Braverman in a company called Tembo. And Tembo it's kind of like a consulting company on where to go to rebuild ravaged infrastructure. Sound familiar? Haiti, Libya, Syria. And this company, CCC, ends up in Haiti, Libya, and Syria, and probably would have gone to Turkey if they'd have been able to do that topple. So Carlos Slim here kind of shows up anytime you're putting in a port and you're starting to ship tankers. He's got a friend who's very involved in the drug business. Now, I've really tried to stay away from the sex trafficking piece and the drug piece, but the sex trafficking piece, I'm sorry, it just has to be covered here because there's just too much evidence. Finally, I just got overwhelmed by the evidence. The other piece of this is when you do take over a country, as we've seen before, you bring in an exile and you make him the president, and then that's how you sign off all the contracts for the bank and the oil. And that's what happens here for HRC. The guy they put in charge is this guy named Bel Reeve. So, and it just so happens HSBC comes back into the picture because as this company here, CCC, goes, they end up building banks everywhere, development banks, and they built the bank in Egypt after the topple there for HSBC, and they're going to build one here in Libya when the civil war is over, and they're going to build one in Syria when that civil war, well, when that invasion's over. These aren't civil wars. So yesterday I talked about the oil piece. And I know a lot of people thought, are you kidding me? How would you ever use a nuclear weapon to cause an earthquake to look for oil, to create fissures in these oil plates? There's one here along the north part of Haiti, and then there's one here down right on Port-au-Prince. Well, if you go back to the old USSR, this is called a peaceful nuclear explosion. You dig deep, deep, deep underground, so it's not, you can't really see it. But the old Soviet Union did 715 of these when they were looking for their oil. This is not unusual. So if you go deep enough, the problem is sometimes you cause a tsunami and sometimes you cause an earthquake. So I'll just let that be as it may. I mentioned yesterday Hillary flew down right after the earthquake and she stayed in her plane. And then she negotiated the release of this Silsby gal who got arrested for the child trafficking, taking these kids up there from Port-au-Prince up to this north part of Haiti. And it reminded me so much of the Loretta Lynch episode with the plane. You stop on the plane, but you don't get off. People come up to the plane and you do your deals, and then you fly off. So this gal here, Monica Peterson, you probably have heard of, she was a sex trafficking investigator, and she went and followed this trail, and she was looking for organizations which were set up like Bill and Hillary's textile thing for Walmart and other companies up there in this northern part of Haiti. And apparently through her investigations, a lot of times they'll set up a seamstress type factory. It's almost like a joke, seamstress, and they become, that becomes a brothel. And she surmised that this mine that these guys all invested in up here in the north part of Haiti, this is the symbol for the VCS mining, is extremely close to these seamstresses here. And I don't know if you remember the old West, but everywhere you had a mine, you had, you know, a brothel and a, you know, a playhouse. So it just seemed like consanguinity is the only word I can think of. There's a better word here, symbiosis or whatever. But she investigated this, and she actually went to the mine and saw there wasn't a lot of mining activity. And so that's where I got the idea yesterday that maybe this is just a gold funnel for now until they perfect their mining techniques. They only have one page on their website. But here's another connection with Braverman. I misquoted yesterday that Hillary put $1 billion into Haiti from USAID funds. This is the kind of the funding mechanism of the State Department. It was actually $6 billion. And the World Bank kind of commissions this and sets up the loan, and it goes through the World Bank. And this is the connection to Eric Braverman. So this is the $300 million complex. But also, when I noticed there's a lot of road building, and you're going to probably put a port here. And again, I go back to the CCC again for road building. And then there's a couple of other businesses like Cemex, which is the Mexican cement company, which is a Carlos Slim company, for building the roads and point. So it's almost like a formulaic approach to completely exploiting a country. Oil, all the minerals, all the human capital, the low-wage labor to get into the United States. You can sell bribes to get no-tariff manufacture into the United States and cheap labor for Walmart, and then Walmart will give you a donation. I mean, it's a one-stop shop. And then the last piece here is, I'll just put this out here, Punta Cana is where every year Hillary has meetings with Henry Kissinger. So I don't know what they discuss out there, but the interesting thing here is this gold here is being mined by Dominican Republic interests. So it's almost like they're using the Dominican Republic as this place where they're going to be going in and kind of sucking the resources and people and everything else out to build these, you know, hotels and kind of luxury. So it almost seems like that's the strategy, is just almost to destroy Haiti to get all the resources out for these luxury hotels, like Richard Branson has stayed here with the Clintons and so forth. You'll see this in the Cheryl Mills email. And I thought I'd just get this out today because so many people are researching this and asking me questions about it. And this is why the emails are so important. Just like we saw the emails kind of unravel the Libya situation and the Syria situation, these emails will also unravel the Haiti situation. So this is why this obstruction by McCabe here, he's protecting a child trafficking network. It's not just, I give up, guys. It's not just an oil exploitation network and an arms exploitation network. The child trafficking is happening as well. And you've got 14, now we know there's 18, I should change this, Gmail accounts at the State Department, which is, again, felony. No, we're not going to take 5 years and have 5 years of kids, you know, going off in all different directions. I don't know if a walnut is somebody from Haiti, and somebody said maybe pasta is from Syria and pizza is from Turkey. I just hope not. But anyway, this is not anyone's reporting. These are their own documents saying we're doing this. We're taking over the country. We're going to, we're going to do all this in Benghazi. So if you can watch previous episodes if you want to see. But this is the proof of, hey, we're taking over a country through the Clinton Foundation. That's what we do here. And as soon as we go in, we get the money. We get two stamps. We go down to the stamp store, and we get a Libya Central Bank stamp, and we get a Libya National Oil Company stamp, and we get a guy to come in to do the stamping, and that's it. We sell everything off, everything, lock, stock, and barrel. And here I just wanted to show you that, again, this pipeline, and then China wanting to take the rights all down here, and here you see Kissinger again. Is this yet another play of human trafficking along here with Indonesian kids and Vietnamese kids, like the old Shoeshine Boys way back when? That was a child trafficking ring, and then the Filipino kids. So we need to see the emails. And when you have you know, this kind of communication between the personal aide of Hillary and the general, back and forth, lots and lots of emails with all these operational plans. And remember, this is before and after he left the State Department, okay? So we have to get to the bottom of this. And now, if we're using sarin gas to clear rat lines for sex trafficking, that would really disappoint me. You've seen this in previous episodes. 1, 2 is to get rid of Gaddafi. 3 is to get the weapons over up to through Abdullah here to ISIS, and 4 is the rat line. So the attack here on Aleppo, that's not only to open up this oil rat line, but it's also to make sure that the people are trapped. And then they're used, as this reporter said, Ava Bartlett, they're used as human shields. But they're not, unfortunately, it also opens up a potential sex rat line down to Qatar, UAE, and Saudi Arabia. And if you look at a person, what they're willing to pay for a person versus a 25-gallon thing of oil, and I never considered this before, but I asked in previous emails, I don't know what they're doing with the kids. And now I figured it out. I know what they're doing with the kids. They're taking them to the very rich countries that sponsored this pipeline play. So Eric Schmidt, New York Times, he's going to get a Pulitzer for this, 52 gas attacks. You're going to find additional ones in Iraq. You've got evidence where Seymour Hersh, where the president found out this was happening and tried to shut it down. Obama's trying to cover it up, unfortunately, but he's not a part of the planning here. The planning was Hillary and McCain and Timber Sycamore. That's Mazzetti. And that's another Pulitzer from Mazzetti.
And the second installment is about what?
The same thing. Well, it's day 61. So mind you, there's a lot that has preceded. But he gives a kind of summary of all of the steps from Haiti. He realizes that before Libya, there was even Haiti. And so then he goes into the Clinton rape of Haiti and the Laura Silsby thing with the children. And so then he, in the second installment, he acknowledges, yes, we have to deal with the child trafficking. And this became evident to him. Of course, I knew about it because I knew about it back when it happened. But the emails established the relationship between Laura Silsby, who was the one who was trying to take the Haitian children out of Haiti, and Hillary Clinton. And so the child trafficking thing becomes real. Of course, you know, that's one of the points on which I questioned Donald Rumsfeld, trafficking of women and little girls. We're seeing it now in 2017.
Braverman set up this funnel here, which is IHRC. He took it over from Laura Graham. This is the gal who was about ready to commit suicide because everyone in the Clinton Foundation was fighting over all the Libya and Haiti money. Braverman took that over, and it's kind of like, I compared it in the last episode to being Hamlet trapped inside the castle, trying to get out. This IHRC is also going to be used to take this Libya gold money, which I think is a lot more than $1.2 billion. And funnel it through a gold mine for her brother in Haiti. So I'm not going to go through any of this stuff about how to hire the army, get the stingers, and topple Syria and Iraq and Libya. Watch earlier episodes for that. I'm going to just jump straight to Consolidated Contractors. Now, for every one of these oil plays, and this is Jeff Skoll, for every one of these oil plays or mining plays or whatever, you're going to have a lot of roads and construction that you're going to need to build. So you're going to need if you really want to do this right, you're going to have a pipeline construction company. This is the largest construction company in the Middle East. You're going to have somebody who can build skyscrapers. You're going to have somebody who can build roads. And you're going to need a cement company. You're going to need a shipping company to bring it all in. And that's basically what Jeff Skoll and Justra Habe, they're all involved. They're going to all be involved in that Greek pipeline that I talked about in earlier episodes. So Tembo is more the consulting side. This is more like the World Bank side of whenever there's a disaster like Haiti, here's what you're going to need to do. We're going to need to rebuild your infrastructure, redo the pipelines, redo the roads so we can service the pipeline, redo the electrical grid so we can push the gas up and down the pipeline, all that sort of thing. So Jeff Skoll and Braverman are in the same group. And then there's another guy from the Clinton Foundation that are in that kind of the consulting side. And then it gets over here, it's more the commercial side. So the Greek pipeline, the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, you're going to see Consolidated Construction involved in that, and you're going to see Justra involved in that. There's also Carlos Slim, he's the billionaire from the Mexican or Latin telephone companies. So he's all over Latin America and the largest holder for telco. And I'll show how telco can be used to enable a prostitution network, unfortunately, also a drug network, and also a child trafficking network. And I don't want to go there, but when you see certain things happening, like people being killed for investigating sex trafficking or people doing child trafficking, it raises red flags. Okay, so if Hillary flies down here to free her, she doesn't even get off the plane. It kind of reminds you of the Loretta Lynch situation with Bill Clinton. The Comet Pizza guy is down here at the same day. So what's that all about? She's the one who's caught taking kids from Port-au-Prince all the way up to this northern section of Haiti. Well, this sex trafficking researcher looked at this factory that Bill and Hillary built, $300 million, and noted how close it was to these gold mines that Tony Rodham, Hillary's brother, has, along with these other investors, okay? And I don't know if Jeff Skoll's in it, but I know Justra's in this, and Slim is in this. So is this one of those classic old, you know, Wild West movies where you have the miners come into the, you know, body house at the end of the day to spend all their money? I don't know. But they are awfully close. They did build a dormitory of 1,000 beds for these folks. And they also did a deal with their cell phones. They gave them all cell phones, which sounds great. Digicel has a 77% market share in Haiti now. But they also gave them this microfinancing application. Now, that could be great because you say, oh, you want to buy $5 worth of material on your phone? Great. And then you bring it in, you get paid, and we'll pay you back $10 on your phone? Great. But it's also a perfect way to enable a drug situation or child trafficking situation or a prostitution situation. So just by micropayments. So we have to look at the GPS on all these folks. Where really we need to subpoena their phones. We need to look at the GPS of where they are. And also on the subject of GPS, Hillary's investing in all these data companies that track where people are. Now that could be great if you're going to write a proposal for, you know, here's how many people are in the country that are refugees and here's where they ended up living. But it's also a way of kind of, I hate to say this, managing your inventory, knowing where people are at any moment allows you to go, hey, you know, we've got a ship just came in here at the port we just built, you know, by Consolidated Contractors, and, you know, there's opportunities. So again, we need the data. We need this all. Sunshine is the best disinfectant, as Hillary said. So we just need all the data, GPS data, the micropayment data, her GPS for when she's in country. She's murdered in doing this work. They said she committed suicide. Hillary has put, I made a mistake the other day, $6 billion into Haiti, and almost none of it's accounted for. That causes Braverman and all these frustrations. But Braverman is kind of working at McKinsey as a consultant and getting the World Bank. They don't just send it in without somebody giving a stamp of approval, and that was what Braverman was doing. So this $300 million factory that was built for these women sounds really great. The problem is if you are using this as a show home or a show factory, and you're going around the world to different countries like Tetra Pak and saying, hey, we'll use this aid money to build these factories. We'll build you a cement factory. We'll build you a food processing factory. You know, we'll build you a shipping company. But that's what did happen. Tetra Pak did build a plant down there. Now, you're taking in free food and then you're packing it up so it lasts. I get that. But I don't think this should be a private business opportunity for the Clinton Foundation. You've also got luxury hotels being built over here on this side. So it seems like the resources are being taken out of Haiti over here, being spent over here to build luxury hotels.